Welcome to the How to Raise Money podcast for anyone who wants to raise other people's money for a business or property venture. Right now, there has never been more money on the planet, and there has never been more opportunity. This podcast will help you put the two together. So, if you need money for your business or property proposals from banks, lenders, angels, whales, or dragons, this is the podcast for you.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 50th episode of How to Raise Money podcast.
And I'm Nigel Best and 50. Oh my word. Ray, I thought the day would never come, but we're here.
Here it is. And what makes this a mile? Well, it's the 50th episode. It's actually probably the 55th episode because we've got bonus sessions in there, but let's not split hairs.
And the thing is, when people said we would never get to this point, they didn't realise that you can't kick someone off their own podcast. So there was nobody that could tell us we couldn't.
I don't recall anybody saying we wouldn't. But anyway, what I do remember, though, is Seth Godin, the famous Seth Godin, who is a sort of online guru of all things marketing. He said, and I quote, "It's there's no point in listening to any podcast unless it's done at least 50 episodes."
So we've Seth, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show, Seth.
Welcome to the show. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so it's the 50th episode. You would expect us to do something good for the 50th episode, and have we got something for you? Yes, we have. We're going to make an announcement later on in the podcast, tease, that you're going to love to hear. But it is around the number 50. So we're going to talk about that number 50. And Nigel, you can tell us what it's like to reach 50. I've not quite got there yet, but you can tell us what it's like to get 50.
You funny beep. Yeah, yeah. Not yet. Not yet. I'm looking forward to my 40th.
Well, yeah, anyway.
Because so I can't remember it. That's the trouble. I can't remember the last one.
And the title is, what would you do with 50 million quid?
Now, what would you do with 50 million?
What would you do, Nigel? What would you do with 50 million?
Do you know, one of the first things I'd have to think of is, do you go public or do you keep it private? How do you cope with that sort of figure? And does it open you up? You know, all of a sudden you get a bit of a mind F, don't you? Because you're suddenly launched into something that you haven't incrementally got there. So the shock is quite impressive to your body, to your system. And I think one of the first things is, do you suddenly tell people? Or do you suddenly view everyone with suspicion? Are they all out to get you? So I'd probably wrestle with that one.
Well, they'd be all out to get your money, that's for sure. That goes without saying. As soon as anyone knows that you've got a few quid, everyone is after it, whether that's a car salesman or the joiner or, you know, investment managers. They're all out to get
you. Well, that's it. And apparently it suddenly makes you very attractive, far more so than a facelift.
Yes, that's a great quote, isn't it? With what it was Mrs. Merton that said that, wasn't it, about Debbie McGee? What did you to the multimillionaire? The multimillionaire Paul Daniels.
That's it. There you go. So there's the first one, Ray. What would you do? Would you go public?
Well, let's clear it up first of all, because there's different ways to get to 50 million. Now, I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that we or anyone we know is going to suddenly hand you 50 million quid for no reason. There's also the, well, people who play the lottery or play lotto or play games of chance who suddenly come into lots of money. For those, there are thousands and thousands and thousands who wouldn't. And I read the other day a quote that says, for every person that steps up and says, you know, and shakes a bottle of champagne and sprays it and shows you a massive check from winning the lottery, they said if every person who didn't win stood up for just 5 seconds and said, I didn't win the lottery, it would take 36 years for everyone to say that. Imagine that.
Right. You've got to get out of that dark room and stop working these things out. That is, you're going to go to a bad place.
My calculator was smoking. It was smoking that day. So 50 million. The podcast is called How to Raise Money. So we're talking about someone who has, someone who's raised that level of money is going to be already mentally taken care of, I would imagine. You're not going to get to that level without having quite a few things in place, and not least the ability of handling that. Because when we go back to the, and I'm going to mention this toothpaste before you do, Nigel, to go back to the Crest model, remember, credibility. What credibility do you have? So if someone is going to advance that kind of money, you have to have a certain level of credibility. And as I said earlier, towards the end of this podcast, we're going to tell you about that magic figure of 50 million. But for entertainment purposes, let's just wildly speculate, because for most people, the sum of 50 million is only really going to come to them in some kind of windfall. They're going to either do the lottery, or they're going to have some auntie that they didn't know about who's died, and she was a codebreaker during the Second World War, and she invested her 6 shillings and 6 pence into a fruit company called Apple, and all of a sudden she's leaving it to you. We can all dream. So let's just speculate and say, well, what would you do with that? So you've posed a question there, Nigel, and the question is, would you go public or would you stay private? Well, I have to say, I'm not likely to win the lottery because I never do it, but if I did, let's just say I wandered into a shop and they managed to convince me to do an unlucky dip. I don't know why they call them lucky dips, because they're only lucky if you actually win, aren't they? So I think it should be called an unlucky dip until you win.
Okay, so are you going down the legal route and you're going to actually sue them for the fact that it is actually an unlucky dip? That will play havoc with the marketing.
Oh, well, it would, I suppose. But let's just say I dipped, whatever it is, a fiver or two quid. What is it, 3 quid, 2 quid? I don't know. Whatever a lottery ticket is, let's just imagine.
You've got one. Somehow you've got one.
Somehow I've got one, and bingo, the bingo's a different game, but ping, cha-ching, it's come up, and I get the lucky call. I go into the shop and say, can you check my ticket? And, there's an explosion of balloons coming down from the ceiling and all sorts of things, and I'm told I've got 50 million. Well, that's the first thing. I wouldn't go into the shop and do that. I would check online. And to answer the question, because I'm not a politician, so I am going to answer the question.
Oh, that's good.
That is good, yeah. Because a politician's answer to this question, what would you do with 50 million quid, would be, in this area of considerable uncertainty, where there is a possibility of a theoretical risk, I will adopt a precautionary approach.
They wouldn't even say that. They'd say, well, it's not about the 50 million, it's about this, and then talk about something completely different.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. All right, well, would I go public or would I stay private? Absolutely private.
Yeah.
Not only would I stay private from the public, I wouldn't even tell my wife. I would have a challenge with myself to say nothing to nobody, no how, no way, to quote the line from The Wizard of Oz, not no way, not no how.
There you go. Apart from your podcast buddy.
I'm telling not anyone. No one, okay. No way, no how. It's not something I would ever disclose at all. At all, right. for a whole host of reasons. But,
I think that's interesting. That very first thing, that's the first thing that they're going to come at you with is, do you want to tell everyone? Do you want to be on TV? It's a biggie.
No,
it's a biggie.
No.
And you can't go back. If you go public, you can't take that back. That's for sure.
Exactly.
So, all right, the second one then is, do you go spend crazy or do you immediately think save?
My immediate knee-jerk reaction is save. When you say spend crazy, I think everybody wants to have, the house, the car, the holiday, all that kind of carry on.
I was thinking, you're you're Scottish, so I was thinking, were you going for the family size bag of peanuts rather than the small individual size? That's what I was thinking when I was saying spend crazy.
I think I'd go for the Costco because the cost per peanut is reduced dramatically.
You've already done the stats, haven't you? You've already done the stats.
It should be PPP, price per peanut. The price per peanut is dramatically reduced if you go to Costco and buy a bargain bucket.
There you go. So that you heard it here, folks, first, that Ray would be straight down to Costco with his 50 million in his skyrocket. Yeah.
No, in all seriousness, I think you would, if you land that kind of money, you want to look at it as, you know, it's got to do you for the rest of your life. You want to leave, I hope, some kind of legacy. You want to build some kind of assets. But you would spend some of it. Of course you would. You would set aside some money to spend. But, you know, there's only so many cars you can drive. There's only so many houses you can live in and so many holidays you can go on. And you can do all that from the income produced by assets. So if you play your cards right, you know, your 50 million in a couple of years' time should be 60. You know, it should not be diminishing. It should be going up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even doing it on some sort of simple savings, you should be able to go on holiday and come back to more money than when you left, no matter how big your holiday is, really.
Absolutely.
In terms then of that, you, it strikes me then that the next question, will it change you or will it just amplify who you are anyway? It sounds to me like, Ray, it's just going to amplify who you are anyway in terms of a very pragmatic, sensible approach to it.
Yes, no, I think so. I mean, there's, I think the, again, to go back to the lottery, I mean, it's been going since, what, the mid-90s in the UK?
Early 90s, it was John Major, I think, wasn't it?
In Ireland, they used to have sweepstakes and all that sort of, and prior to that, in the UK, we had football pools. You know, so there's always been these games around. I have to say, and I have to kind of take my hat off to the football pools, because had it not been for the football pools, I would not be sitting here today.
Pray tell.
Let me tell you a story. Well, when I was younger, my father had a pub, and one of his customers won the football pools, coming into the pub, won the football pools. In those days, it was, you know, 160 grand or whatever it was, I can't remember, but it was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he bought the pub from my father at an inflated price.
Wow.
So that kind of took us up a different financial level. And it meant that when I was, 11, 12, instead of going to the sort of local comprehensive school, I was sent to a private fee-paying school.
Mm-hmm.
So I would never have got that level of education. Then obviously I went on and did other things, and then I got a law degree and, you know, went to university and so on. I probably never would have done that. Who knows what sliding doors would have intervened. So we can directly join the dots and go back and see that my life changed as a result of it. Not directly winning it, but someone that my father, knew quite well.
Right. How interesting. Fascinating, isn't it? But I do think, though, that a lot of people, if they've got a crazy nature, or typically, I mean, think about it. What do we say? Whenever people talk about the lottery, the first question is, what would you spend it on? You look at the breakfast TV and they're going out to someone, knocking on their door, handing them a check. Here's 10,000. What are you going to spend it on? On the radio, someone does a quiz, they win £1,000. What are you going to spend it on? We are being pre-programmed into immediately spending it, getting rid of it as fast as we can. And that's the weird thing. So if we suddenly get an even bigger amount of money, people just accelerate that feeling that when you've got it, you've got to spend it. I mean, you could have, with 50 million though, you could have some fun. You could buy some seriously
good things. Well, before we go into fun, let me answer the question that you posed earlier. Would it change me? Would it accelerate things? Well, I mean, you can go on and look at my website. I already donate to an organization called B1G1, which makes charitable impacts. So I would do more of those. So I think last year we made 374,000 charitable impacts. I would vastly accelerate that, because I think that's great. I would have a bigger wine cellar. I'd have a walk-in wine cellar. So it would certainly, exacerbate those things.
Is that one of those walk-in, crawl-out ones? So you have steps down and then a shallow ramp to get yourself back out.
That's the one, with barrels. That's the one.
Yeah.
But going back to the lottery and their marketing and advertising, they went from it could be you to now I think their marketing is who wins if you win, which I think is quite a nice play. It's a good thing. Who wins if you win?
Yeah.
So to answer that question, there would be a lot of people that would win in my life anyway. Certainly, people that have helped me out. I've got friends and colleagues and who've helped me in circumstances, and they have their own challenges. So yeah, you'd want to look after all of those people.
All right, but hang on. What's the crazy thing you'd buy? What's the thing that you think, I'm going to get me one of those. Is it, I mean, you talk about unicorns all the time. Are you going to buy yourself one?
No, well, the crazy thing I would probably buy, and I could buy it now actually, is a single wheeled motorcycle.
Okay.
A motorbike with one wheel.
Okay. I've got one of those for sale. It's about 30 rhino, million.
If anyone wants to look it up, it's called a Rhino. It's about $5,000. It's electric and it balances. You can sit on one big fat wheel. And they use them in America. The police use them to drive along the boardwalk and that sort of thing. A number of years ago, I looked at getting one in Edinburgh, and because it would be fantastic from a marketing point of view. You know, if you had someone with a jacket on with something on the back and a flag, and they drove around, it would just, everybody would look at it. The reason I didn't get it is Edinburgh is built on seven hills, and this thing can't go up an incline of more than about 10 degrees. So it would have been completely useless, and it can't go more than 30 miles an hour. But where I'm living now, which is in Lincolnshire, it's flat. There's no hills anywhere. So it would be great for down here, but not so good for Edinburgh. So that would be my ridiculous indulgence.
All right. I can safely say that not a single one of our amazing podcast listeners would have picked out that you, as your first thing that you buy with 50 million, was going to be a one-wheeled motorcycle.
Well, you know, we like to give entertainment value here, don't we? Anyway, it is the How to Raise Money podcast, so we should get on with, stick to the chosen subject. Okay. But you've got a few more questions there?
I've got a few more questions. So you've already touched on some of them, which is spend now or spend in the future. And I think with that sort of sum of money, you can do an element of both. But we both know that if you hold on to the asset and the asset generates you an income, that income can then mean that you can enjoy all sorts of purchases and consumption without destroying the original asset. And that's the key thing. Keep that for the long term. But the next one, and this is where it's really weird. It comes into stark contrast what people would do in certain circumstances compared to everyday life. So in everyday life, we always talk about people and they listen to the man in the pub as opposed to paying for a professional advisor. If you had 50 million pounds, though, Ray, would you go to the man in the pub to find out how to deal with it, or would you get some professional advice?
I wouldn't do either.
I set you up with a yes, no, and you bang it out.
Bang
out of bounds.
But let me give you my answer.
Come on.
The man in the pub, you wouldn't want to take financial advice from the man in the pub at all, unless the man in the pub was Warren Buffett or, you know, somebody of that ilk. I wouldn't take a professional advice either, because the professional advisors are there to sell you a product that they are attached to for their commission and so on. And if they were so good at giving financial advice, they would be, you know, very wealthy themselves. There is, and in fact, I'm going to give a shout out to the only professional financial advisor I would talk to, and it's a guy called Alan Steele. Alan Steele Asset Management, alansteele.com. He's based in Linlithgow. He is very, very wealthy. Excuse me, and has been doing this for a long, long time. And he sends out regular newsletters. He's very contrarian and a very, very nice guy. So he's the only financial advisor I would take advice from.
All right. So my point was, when people don't have much, they don't go for professional advice. And they say the man in the pub is good enough. What's the threshold, the tipping point, where someone would get professional advice? And when we talk about property and raising money, we tend to, you know, people will get crap advice for free or try and do things for free up to a certain point. And only when they get, and it's all personal and the level will change as to who you are. But when you get to a certain point, you think, oh, actually, is this me stepping out of my comfort zone into my excitement zone and I now need a bit of help? Or do I think I can still do it on some free advice or cobbling together something off the internet? And it's just, you get into stark contrast when somebody gives you such a large amount of money, their mindset, actually, they wake up, it clicks, the penny drops, and they go, actually, I think I need a bit of help now. But for so long and for so many people, when we're talking about how to raise money, they look at getting professional advice as a waste of money, as a cost, as an expense. They don't see it as an investment. And I think That's one of the key things that I would suggest to people. You've got to, if you find someone good, so Alan Steele, you've given him a good shout out there. If you can find someone like him, then you would always say to yourself, actually, getting advice from them is an investment.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, there's an old expression that free advice is worth every penny. But you can get targeted advice, and the kind of people I would be talking to for advice on the money would be the likes of Mark Homer, Rob Moore, people who have made many millions and know how to handle many millions, especially Mark Homer. I mean, you know, he's got a lot of experience in the area and a lot of good advice, and he uses, I think he uses Hargreaves Lansdown as his go-to place for stocks and shares and index funds, which, you know, you would want to spread your money around. You wouldn't want to have it all in one asset class. You would want to mix and match. And they give lots of great, effectively free advice on their podcasts. So, you know, Mark Homer's called Mark My Words. His podcast is very, very good. And he offers a lot of very good advice on there about handling money and how you move it around for the best effect. And Rob Moore's the same. And they're obviously partners in business together. Well, not obviously, but some people may not know that. But yes, they are partners in business. They run a company called Progressive, and they do lots of training. They own lots of property. And that's the sort of people I would be looking to get advice from, is those who have done it and made it, not necessarily those who are working for financial institutions.
Yeah, the one thing that I always laugh at is when you have a sum of money like this and they say, oh, you need to spread it into different asset classes, and I'm going to buy gold, because when everything goes wrong, I'll be at Tesco's and I'll have gold to buy my food. And I just think, well, my friend, I think the currency in those days will be lead and how much you've got in your particular gun. Because you ain't queuing up at Tesco's. They're just in time food and grocery deliveries are not going to be working when only a few people have a bit of gold to do it. You know, it is going to be dog eat dog. And so maybe you should be investing in some weaponry. There you are. There's controversy for you.
You're starting to sound like you should be in America.
Well, I'm recording this from 22 stories down in my bunker with my 12 years worth of baked beans.
All American listeners, and we've got a lot, Nigel. Have you seen the statistics? We've got a lot of American listeners. We've got a lot of listeners all over the world, but the second biggest audience we have is in America.
So People there, and they're nodding and agreeing with you.
Well, give them a big wave. You know who you are. Thank you so much. One of the things that I'd love to know is get in touch with us and tell us what you would buy instead of Ray's one-wheeled motorbike. Come on, let's have something that you'd do if you had 50 million on that. But let's move on. I've got a very, very serious question here.
Okay.
And the question is, it's an either or, you can't have both. So, Swiss bank account or huge pile of Swiss chocolate? Which would it be, Ray?
Oh, that's a tricky one. That's a tricky one. If I had to choose, it's got to be Swiss bank account. Got to be.
Oh, my word. What have you got against Toblerone? You know, I'm trying to get these sponsorship deals. I know this was going to be a huge thing for Toblerone, and you've blown it.
The hazelnuts get caught in my teeth.
Just like the Crest, and I don't get my toothpaste. I'm doing my best here to get sponsored, but there we are. Swiss bank accounts, always an interesting one. There's a big history there. That would definitely tie in with your keep it private mentality on that one, Ray. I know where you're coming from. Now, one of the weird things is people don't notice it, don't recognize it. But if you ever talk to a rich person about money and someone who isn't so rich about money, you'll find that rich people talk about investments and other people talk about purchases. So you've already started talking about it. How do we, Ray, a bit of advice for people. How do we get people to swap their mindset from purchases to investments? Have you got any top tips that could help people?
Well, there's no magic switch, I don't think. I think it's I've heard it said that people have a financial thermostat. And there are certain things that you can do that can nudge it upwards. And I've also heard it said that people who are paid by the hour tend to think hourly. People who are paid by the week think weekly. People who are paid by the month think monthly. And investors think much longer term. So if there's one thing that I would suggest, if you're looking for the one thing that can change someone's mind, it would be to think longer. Start thinking further into the future. Think 20 years ahead instead of, you know, 2 months ahead or 3 months ahead. And that will have a major impact on how you view finance and investments and getting advice.
Okay, one of the things that I would say is if the people around you are having a conversation which is always about spending it, see if you can get yourself into circles where people are talking about investing it. If you've never tried golf, now with that sort of money might be the time to get in, learn the etiquette, the rules, and see who's there, because people with money tend to congregate in certain areas, don't they? So certain activities, certain hobbies, certain clubs, institutions, whatever it might be. I wouldn't suggest buying a pony, a big wooden hammer, and having a go at polo just yet. But if you can get yourself into the who do you know who would be able to introduce me or take me for a game of golf or something like that, start listening to people's conversations. And I would say, if you're in this position, open your ears, listen to the way that people talk and what they are talking about. And when you don't understand something, say, that was really interesting. Could you explain a little bit more about why you think like that? People don't do it.
No, good advice. Good advice. There's a great book I read a few years ago called Unspeak, which is about words and phrases that are designed to channel our thinking and thoughts into a different direction. You know, if you remember, it used to be global warming, and then that changed to become climate change.
Yeah.
And if you notice, that another one Unspeak is the war on terror. Well, you can't have anything else but a war on terror, can you? You know, they changed that from I can't remember what it was, but they changed it to the war on terror. And I just always find it quite interesting when I see these phrases. I'm always on the lookout for them. I'm alert to them, whether that's in advertising or whether it's on the news, of what exactly are they trying to say? What are they trying to channel us? You know, what direction are they trying to move the population? And it is, as you said earlier, it's all about consumerism and what are you going to spend it on? You know, wouldn't it be great if you, you know, what holiday? And they don't sort of say what are you going to spend it on. They'll say things like, what car are you going to buy? How holiday are you going to have? You know, if you're going for a bigger house, will it be like this? You know, there's always, I don't know, I just feel there's like an agenda. And I'm always alert to that, that's all. So I think everyone should be alert to whatever the agenda is. But anyways.
There you go. Okay. Obviously, we talked about a couple of other things. So a lot of people with a large amount of money worry about their safety. Being overtly sort of consumerist and wealthy, along with their safety, especially if you've got family. So I know people will think about that, but again, that's much more of an issue if you suddenly find yourself being dropped into that situation, I'm sure, as opposed to people that have made the incremental or gradual steps to get to that point. You've also, Ray, touched on how the lottery are refocusing it, because one of my questions would be, is it going to be about you or is it more than you? So who else would benefit from these things? And yeah, we do one where we support children elsewhere, so in other parts of the world. I'd love to do more. I'd love to do more.
Well, that's it. Most of the wealthy people I know, always, you know, they're always involved in some form of philanthropy to various different levels, and they very rarely talk about it. You know, they just get on with it. And there's, you know, people setting up foundations and just doing all sorts of things. And I think that's one of the characteristics that quite a lot of people have when they make a lot of money, is they want to give back. And certainly my experience is the majority of them do. In fact, I don't think I've met anyone who doesn't when you ask them that direct question. They nearly always do.
Okay, so I've come up with a few questions there, some of them less serious than others. But the point of that and the principle of that was to, if you are not necessarily thinking like an investor, if you are not necessarily thinking as you might with someone with wealth and how you can accumulate it, how you can control it as assets, how you can generate Phone's going off. How you can generate income to live on long term. If your mindset is not quite there yet, then what I'd suggest is, okay, go back through this podcast and just say, okay, which bits actually would I probably have made a not such a great decision and I'd like to change it. And that's some way that you can work on. But Ray, you've now got something here, haven't you? You've got a proposal. This is what you promised everyone at the beginning of the podcast. Have you got it there in front of you?
Yes, I did. I promised to make a big announcement. And the announcement is that, the podcast episode is called What Can You Do With 50 Million? Well, we have met a fund that is prepared to make available £50 million for listeners of our 50th episode podcast. Cue trumpets, cue fanfare. No? Okay.
I was going to say, that kind of didn't fly at all, did it? But
just to reiterate, we have a fund that is prepared to make available 50 million for listeners of our 50th episode. Now, obviously, there's conditions attached. Don't be getting all excited there and going, wah, get my hands on this. Here are the conditions. The money will be available to property developers in the UK only. So UK, United Kingdom, meaning England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. And having said that, we have some proposals from the Republic of Ireland, totalling at the moment about circa 18 to 20 million euros. That is two separate proposals that total that. Now, that does not mean that you extract that away from the 50 and there's less, because they were already in there before this 50 came up. But anyway, now, if you're listening to this podcast after the 6th of April 2019, then this fund will be closed. The deadline to have a decision in principle is before the 6th of April, not ones that are legally complete. So that's a decision in principle. Now, how do you get a decision in principle? Okay, well, you go to our website, which is raisingangelfinance.co.uk. You will see in the middle, it says application form. You fill out that application form. Now, who is this targeted at? Okay, it's targeted at pre-qualified developers who have property proposals showing a 20% plus that or more margin to costs, looking for 2 million and up. So there's three categories here I'm going to give. So if you, in the first category, if you are an existing developer and you have deals that you've done already, so remember the CREST model is credibility, you have a bit of credibility, you've done this stuff before, you have some deals in the pipeline and you are looking for 2 million and up, you can make an application. Okay, then the second lot, and this is slightly higher now, if you have a commercial deal, so a commercial conversion, let's just say, of 10 million and up, so you may have a commercial conversion on one site that is looking for 10 million, or you have two that each add up to 10 million, then you can be in there as well. And then finally, if you are looking for any kind of mezzanine funding for a proposal of £250,000 or up. So that's the three criteria that means you can apply for this money. So let me tell you about our most common proposals that we get, and I'll just explain them and then I'll reiterate what the terms of this are. So the most common proposals we get are commercial conversions, brownfield sites. Now, the difference between brownfield and greenfield, obviously brownfield is inner city, so if you tear down an old mill or you tear down a building and you want to put up new flats or something, that would be called a brownfield site. So commercial conversions under what's called permitted development, where you can take an office block and under permitted development you can convert that into residential, let's just say. So that would be one of our most common proposals. The second most common one would be new build houses on greenfield sites. So that is someone who has purchased a farmer's field and they want to build 25 houses or whatever happens to be on that field. That would be our second most common proposal. Our third most common proposal would be new build apartments, either green or brownfield. So houses and then apartments, people wanting to build apartments. One bedroom apartments are particularly in demand. A lot of people build two, but one beds are particularly in demand right now. So new build apartments on green and brownfield sites. So that's the third of our four most common proposals. And finally, our fourth most common proposal would be the purchase of portfolios. So if because there's been changes, and we've talked this on previous podcasts about Section 24, which is a tax that really affects private landlords, some of them are selling up their portfolios, and that could be 10 properties, 20 properties, 600 properties, it doesn't matter what it is. But we have experienced operators who want to add to their portfolio by buying up other portfolios. So we get quite a lot of proposals where people come and say, right, I want to, you know, buy this portfolio and convert them into serviced apartments or some other form of residency that can cash flow quite well. So there we are. So our big announcement, just to say, to, I suppose, wind up this episode. We're coming to work.
I mean, that is huge. That is huge. For people that are kind of thinking, is Ray talking about 50 million being available? The answer is a most definite.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is available. I am fully expecting this to go relatively quickly. There are people who will be listening to this and going, I've got to get my application in. Remember, it is an application-only process. If you're listening to this after the 6th of April 2019, then this fund will be closed. If you're listening prior to the 6th of April 2019, then you need to go to raisingangelfinance.co.uk/application form and fill out the document that is there. There are only about 8 questions, and we will pre-qualify and narrow down the amount of applications that we have. So, how do you apply? Well, if you are a developer who already has a track record, remember the CREST model, credibility, and you have property proposals showing you 20% or more margin to costs, and you're looking for 2 million and up, then we want to hear from you. If you have a commercial deal that is 10 million or more, we want to hear from you. Or if you're looking for mezzanine funding of, say, minimum 250,000, so by mezzanine funding, I mean you maybe already have a proposal done and you're just looking for that final top-up, then we might be able to help. But if the 50 million already goes in commercial deals and pre-qualified developers, then obviously we won't have anything left. So we'll see how this goes. If this goes quite well and we get a good quality of applicant, then we might just do it again. And, Nigel, we'll have the 100th episode coming up. So what does that say?
We're going to go bigger. We're going to double it. The next 50, we're going to double it all. We'll have 100 million available. Folks, hopefully you are now, you know, salivating. You've kind of turned us off and you're already going there for the application form. It does talk you through it. So this can't be a pie in the sky. I've just suddenly thought of it. I'm driving along. I've just suddenly seen a building. That one will do. It does need a bit more thought about it. It does need a proper application. After all, these are going to be people investing with you, in your property deal. But wow, what an amazing thing. So we've sort of said, what would you do if you had 50 million arrive as a windfall? Ladies and gentlemen of the How to Raise Money podcast, it's there. All you need to do is put your application in. So get that application in to give us once more, Ray, the website address for that application form.
The website is raisingangelfinance.co.uk. That's all one word, raisingangelfinance.co.uk/application form. You will see it there. And you just fill in the online form and we will take it from there. Now, I just want to add a final sort of caveat is that this is what we do all the time. So for those of you people who are listening to this podcast, How to Raise Money, we do this all the time. We get applications in on a very regular basis. So it does not mean that if you're listening to this after the 6th of April, there's no point making an application. Absolutely, do make an application because we have lots of investors, lots of funds that we can go out to. There are lots of lenders out there. And we do an awful lot of the legwork. We pre-qualify applications and we pass them on to these lenders who are all FCA qualified and FCA registered. And they are the ones that will lead you through the process to actually getting the funds in your bank. So if you're listening to this after the 6th of April, you can still, of course, apply. But if you want to try and get a hold of this fund before the 6th of April and you have a deal in the offing, then get onto the website and send it through. Now, please, please, please do not text me, WhatsApp me, don't call me, don't go get me on Twitter and start telling me your story. Don't send through an email with 40,000 attachments. Please don't WeTransfer me if you know my email address. Use the application form. It's the only way that we can manage and control this. And if it goes quite well, then you heard it here first. We will have another fund. And we might not have to wait till the 100th episode for that one. We'll see how this one goes, Nigel. There we go.
Absolutely.
In the corner of my mouth and looking suspiciously at the screen here. There we go.
But this is it. This is brilliant. Ray, it's been wonderful so far. I'm looking forward, you know, for the first 50 or so episodes of the How to Raise Money podcast. It's amazing how fast the time has gone. Really excited about the next 50 and beyond. Have you enjoyed yourself so far?
Of course, yeah, it's great fun. I mean, why do you not do something like this? If you do what you enjoy, you never work a day in your life. So there you go.
And if you see somebody going around on a one-wheeled motorbike, you know who he is.
And Seth Godin, if you're listening, in your face. Thank you for motivation.
Yeah, well, I can see some sort of Evel Knievel setup with a ramp. You on a one-wheeled motorbike and Seth Godin lying down as you attempt to jump in. It's there. It's there.
Thinking about that, we could get mannequins. You know, the mannequins from the shops, you know, just all lined up. Tell the difference because they all look like Seth Godin. I know he loves us and we love him. He's a great guy. Yeah.
Absolutely, Seth. Thank you so much. And to everyone else, for our podcast listeners, we are getting closer to our target of 75 reviews. Actually, we need to give a shout out. I know this episode is going on a bit, but let me just try and get in here. Because there was one in here and I wanted to just give them a shout out. So, Ray, say something whilst I'm trying to find it.
Is this a letter of the week you're looking up? No?
Yeah, it is.
We're receiving letters?
Oh, yeah, I know. We're good.
While Nigel is searching that up, you can, of course, you can email maria@raisingangelfinance.co.uk with your thoughts, hints, tricks, tips, suggestions, questions, anything like that. Send them to Maria. You can find Nigel on Twitter at Nigel at great every time?
Or Nigel? Well, the best one, Nigel@nigeltbest.com.
Nigel T. Best. And Twitter, I'm Ray_McLennan, @Ray_McLennan. And @RaisingFinan is there. We never use that one that much because it's a difficult handle to get hold of. But you can get us on Twitter, you can get us on email, you can get us all through all the usual channels. And obviously, on the
here we
site.
Here we go. We've got a review. It's a review. So it's a five star. We love five stars. We're getting closer to our target of 75. So brilliant. Thank you. This is from Nick Hookfield. Nick, thank you so much for this. This is what he says. Bursting with tangible quality information every time. My favorite podcast by miles.
Oh.
Nick, thank you so much. That is good. Nick, tell us what you do. And, you know, why it's so useful. And let's see if we can help you some more. But we'll keep coming back to that. We've got some from TNV 1973. Full of tips and advice. I really like listening to this. And I thought it would be boring. However, thankfully, he follows that up by saying, it's not. It's a lot of fun at times, too. So that's pretty good, isn't it? So we're getting them. Ray, thank you so much for everyone for that. We are still at 5.0 out of 5 on our ratings. Excellent. I'm waiting for the one star, and
it will come.
Well, I think if someone put a one star and they say something like, "I put this at one star, even though it's 5, just so you'd read it out,"
you know you're going to get someone that'll do that now.
There we go.
Well, on that 50th bombshell, that 50 million bombshell.
50 million.
I have been Ray McLennan.
I'm still Nigel Best.
Thank you for listening.
We'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the How to Raise Money podcast. It's made for people who want to raise money as debt or investment equity for their business or property proposal or empire. The website has all the useful links and underlying research, and you can get downloads of the checklists and other useful information. You can find all that at howtoraisemoney.co.uk. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Ray_McLennan and Nigel Best at Positive Nigel. You can check the blog at raisingangelfinance.blogspot.co.uk. See you next time, where we can show you how to raise money. There is abundance. There is money enough for everyone on the planet. The question is, who has yours?